Hello and welcome to Macintosh and Maud Haven't Seen What? The podcast where Macintosh and Maud force each other to watch movies they should have already seen.
I'm David, a.k.a. Macintosh.
And I'm Diana, a.k.a. Maud. What are we watching this week? Everybody, we're here with a special episode where we are going to go through the Oscar-nominated songs.
It's always an interesting and unique category.
Yes, it's always fun to see who they pick and what they pick.
Because sometimes the movie can be a giant turd burger, but the song's pretty amazing.
Or, like last year, they had many options from one movie and they only picked one. And same thing here. They did that again this year.
No, they did that. But I think we've got some decent nominees here. And our first song this year is Stand Up for Something from the movie Marshall, written by Diane Warren and Lonnie R. Lynn, and performed by Andra Day featuring Common.
You can have all the money in your hands, all the possessions anyone can ever have, but it's all worthless treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. You can have everything, but what does it mean? It all means
okay, so the first thing I thought when I heard that was, is there a remix?
Why is that?
Because of Common.
Yeah.
His rapping, which he's a good rapper.
Yeah.
And he has an amazing voice. He's very juvenile.
His verse is so bad on this track.
Like.
And this is a killer track.
And the other first thing I thought was, we needed Lynn to write this.
Oh.
Could we have had Lin-Manuel write Common's verse?
Could we have had like Q-Tip or Busta or somebody that's an actual rapper? Sorry, Lin. You're great.
I think my brain goes to Lin is because of the historical weight
that is supposed
to be carried with this movie.
But seriously, other than Common do it. Okay. Let's just put it that way. Common is a legitimately great rapper.
He is. And a decent actor at that.
Putting a rap on a song, mm-hmm. and a song that's supposed to be meant for mass appeal, requires a different touch than writing, you know, just straight rap lyrics.
No, agreed.
It does. Like, if Kendrick Lamar shows up on a Taylor Swift remix, that's going to require a certain different lyrical style.
No, I agree.
Kendrick doesn't take away anything from his style, he's just going to write different types of lyrics for it.
Yeah.
But Common, the whole lyrics of this song are bad. That's really my thing.
Andra Day sang it.
She sang it. Common raps. I'm assuming Common
is Andra put the rap in on the there. Movie.
She is in it as Minton Singer. So she's in it.
Okay, so she's
as
in
a
it.
Singer.
Yeah, she's probably singing this song.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rise up, love, lift your hands. I stand with you cause I understand. Ain't here to judge, just to take a stand. The greater plan's the creator's plan. Let's all rise like the day began. Reach out in touch with the Savior's hand. On rock we stand like his native land. Let the ways of love be the ways of man.
It's not a bad song.
She's kick-ass.
She's good. It's not a great song.
Well, the lyrics are kind of boring.
They're cheesy, yeah.
When I looked at the lyrics, I mean, it's just, you know, stand up for something or else you don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same refrain over and over
again. It's pretty generic.
It's generic and bland, but the tone at which she put it, I sort of wrote down, I was like, look, if the tone of this track meets the tone of this movie, I want to see this movie.
And in the video,
Josh Gad punches a guy, so...
Do like Josh Gad, and I have fallen in love with Chadwick Boseman.
You got a rating on it?
Okay, if we're going out of five, I'm going to say a 3.
I put a 3 as well.
Because it's not embarrassing, but it's not
It's a solid effort. It's not as good as Glory when that came out from Selma
Glory
with John
really
Legend.
Good.
And it's, you know.
And that performance was also beautiful. It'll be interesting to see what they do at the Oscars to perform this.
It's not as good as Andre Day doing Rise Up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a whole room of talented people that just.
It's just that missed the mark.
It's the lyrics. It's but just it's, the lyrics aren't so
it's
good.
It's still a three. It's not. They didn't embarrass themselves.
Yeah, so.
All right, what's next?
What's next is a movie. I'm sad I still haven't seen, and it's Remember Me from Coco, written by Kristen Anderson
Lopez
and Robert Lopez.
Okay.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye, remember me. Don't let it make you cry, for even if I'm far away.
The song is so good.
It's really fucking good.
Okay, so there are several versions of the song within the movie.
Yeah.
And so we just listened to them in order.
I had no context for this other than I tried to get a little bit of it from what I could find on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is this is a very simple song.
Yep.
It is not complex or hard to get, but by hearing those three different versions, you feel the entire through line of the movie.
Well, yeah. There was recently an interview on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, of course, because that's what I listened to, with the two creators of the movie, and they talked about the song. And the problem posed to the Lopezes, who wrote this, the husband and wife team, who also did Frozen, was we need a song that serves two purposes, where maybe if we just change... how like they just were like, we need a song that you can sing in two completely different ways. It has to be the same song.
Yeah.
And they loved that challenge and they gave us this.
I know.
I really hope they do the version that shows up at the very beginning of the film and the version that shows up at the end of the film at the Oscars.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye. Remember me, don't let it make you cry, for even if I'm far away.
Because it would play beautifully on screen.
Can I also say, I really hope they do it in Spanish, because hearing this song in Espanol is amazing. It's a beautiful song in English,
okay,
but it's even better in Spanish.
If they do the first version, which is the Ernesto de la Cruz, if they do that version in Spanish and they do the other part in English, that would be awesome. I think that's the best way to get all of them mixed together.
Yeah.
My preferred version is the Ernesto de la Cruz version, which I'm fairly certain Benjamin Bratt actually sang his part.
Major
I think props. So. I think he did. I could be wrong, because I don't. Gael Garcia Bernal did not. I can't remember for sure. I don't think so. But I love the Ernesto de la Cruz version because it reminds me so much of Desi Arnaz. And I love Lucy. Of course, our daughter's name is Lucy. So I love that vibe, that kind of ladies' man, like, part of the sequence. It's just like, oh, this is fun. Like, this is, like, I want to dance to this music. And then it's, the other version is just heartbreaking.
Well, I think what's really interesting then is after you hear the heartbreaking version, you go back and listen to the original, and you realize how much pain is in that ladies' man song.
Well, the original is the Coco version.
Right.
Okay, you haven't seen the movie.
No.
Ernesto de la Cruz stole the song from Hector.
Ah.
Hector is Coco's father.
Yeah.
He's the one who ran away and cursed the family.
Yeah.
But really, it was Ernesto killed Hector.
Mm.
So that's kind of like the whole thing. So everyone knows Remember Me. It's his most famous song, but he's singing it completely opposite. And actually, like, the whole point of the movie is that Miguel gets cursed because he steals from the dead. Well, Ernesto got cursed first because he stole from the dead. He stole that song.
Yeah.
But this song is gorgeous. It's well done. It really, honestly, I would not be surprised they walk away with the trophy.
What's your rating?
I want to give it a 5.
I gave it a 5.
Okay. Okay. We're going to give it a 5. I mean, they already have an Oscar for Let It Go. And this song makes Let It Go look like trash.
for me, out of all of them, it just felt like the most creative, and it's the best song from a film.
Okay.
Not necessarily just the best song.
Okay, well, I haven't heard any of the other ones yet either, so.
Well, that's not true, because the next one up is Mystery of Love by Sufjan Stevens from the film Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, to see without my eyes the first time that you kissed me, boundless by the time I cried. I built your walls around me. White noise, what an awful sound.
So.
Yes.
It's a stare down. Who's going to talk about this one first?
You go ahead.
I really, really like this song.
I know.
And you don't?
Oh, it's a fine song. I mean, it's perfect for the movie.
We've seen this one. The tone is absolutely perfect. Without being what many movies like this would do, which is a hacky portal back to the time period.
Correct.
It doesn't do that at all. Mm-hmm. It's just a beautiful song, and Sufjan is there. I think its problem, and yet one of the reasons I personally really like it, is that the lyrics are very esoteric. Especially getting into the second verse.
Well, that makes sense for the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. The second verse is packed with references to Greek history, to Roman history. There's all sorts of allusions and poetry in there, which I think
are all a big part of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's first and foremost a Sufjan Stevens song.
Yes.
That was happened to be written for this movie.
Hmm.
That's all I got. It's a 3.5.
I gave it a
4.5. I'm not figuring as much.
I thought this is an almost perfect song, and where I downgraded it and know that the Academy would never vote for it per se, I think the issue is, of course, that the lyrics are not going to be easily accessible to people in the moment, and that the music itself is what drives the tone. The lyrics have a bunch of message in them, but nobody's going to really be listening for that.
This one doesn't accomplish what Once did, where it's emotional and it serves the movie and it's going to move an audience. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's a radio song. He did a perfect job.
Yeah.
And I completely understand why they nominated this. It's not taking a trophy.
No. But I think it might be my sneaky favorite. Except that Remember Me is better. I won't lie.
I mean, Remember Me is a better song.
But I really think this is a song that you should definitely read the lyrics, because it is just a beautiful poem, if nothing else.
I'm good, thanks.
I'm a dork about my music. What can I say? All right, coming up next is not an esoteric song at all. This is Mary J. Blige performing Mighty River from the movie Mudbound, written by Mary J. Blige, Raphael Sadiq, and Tara Stinson.
Life is a teacher, time is a healer, and I'm a believer, like a river wild. Ego's a killer, greed is a monster, but love is stronger, stronger than them all. What I can have, I don't want to fight.
That's the song that Stand Up For Something wanted to be.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Stand Up For Something doesn't have a shot against that.
No, not even a little
Mary
bit.
J. Blige.
First of all, can we talk about the production on this song, which is so measured?
It's very subtle.
And well done.
Okay, so Mary J. Blige is in the movie Mudbound, and she's actually nominated for an Oscar.
Right.
So she's amazing.
Uh-huh. She always has been.
We've always known that, but now there's, like, some Oscar love for her. So that's great.
And the problem is, like, I don't know. I'd probably heard some of the songs, obviously, on the radio from, like, her 90s heyday, but I don't remember any of them off the top of my head.
Poor little white boy. Poor little white boy. She's awesome.
I know.
We all know this.
I mean, she sang a song to get Milton Green a kidney, so.
it's a beautiful song. It's got a good message, and I could see this winning again over Remember Me.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as good a song, but I could see them going, that's the song we want to put an Oscar to this year. It's going to be called the political song of the group, and that's fine.
But I don't even see it so much as as political as an emotional plea.
It is an emotional plea.
Like, it has nothing to do with politics.
No, because of our climate right now, it is political.
Well, that's true, and it should be political.
Absolutely, and so I think that's going to become the question. Are they going to go for the political song or the heart-filled song? And I'm not saying that this song is not heart-filled. I'm just saying,
right,
because of our current climate, this is the more political piece.
Well, and there's this one line. So they do this pre-chorus twice in the song. But on the second time around, right before they hit the chorus, they add the line, "We know wrong from right." And that's the perfect line to me to sum up that song.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, this has nothing to do with parties and spectrums. It's like, this is about a moral choice.
Yes.
And morality requires politics to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is about a moral choice and about a moral feeling.
Fair.
And that's what I think is so great about it. It transcends above that and goes for the heart.
All right, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
I was going to give it a 4. I'm going a 4.5 as well. The second time I heard it, and it might have been the first time I heard it, the production wasn't even as rich in my ears as it was this time. I just love how understated it is, how they don't push it, they don't push the instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
They just let it lie well. And I got a feeling that's just as much Rafael Sadiq as Mary J. Blige on this song. Who? Go check his stuff out. He's a Dallas artist.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. For our last one.
Yep.
Drum roll, please.
The one that you've been avoiding.
Oh, boy, have I. This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, written by Penji Pasek and Justin Paul.
Me down. I'm gonna send a blood, gonna drown a mind. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, cause here I come.
Sorry, we were watching this and we're just looking at each other laughing hysterically.
I think they have to turn their Tonys and they have to return their Tonys and their Oscar.
It's one of the worst songs I've heard. Okay, well, so
that's bad.
So let's start here. Okay, first of all, we've talked about on this podcast how I have a problem with the politics and the message of this whole movie.
Yes, and I explained that I figured out how to fix all that.
Exactly, right.
If they had made that movie, the exact movie, but they had changed it from P.T. Barnum to some fake name, we could have let it all go.
So that's there. I still have problems with the politics of the song, and that in specific context, I feel like it's incredibly offensive. But we could set that aside.
Okay.
The production on this is the shittiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It is so bad. I will tell you, I got more choked up listening to this song in the trailer than the 3 minutes of bullshit I just listened to. They ruined the hook that they had. They had a melody, and it's right there when they do the watch out, because here I come. Boom, boom, boom. Like, that whole little sequence right there at the beginning that they play in the trailer, that's the hook. That makes you go, oh, this is the theater. Like, I can see, oh, these are the theater guys. They're writing this for the stage. That's when we get into the full production with the swelling music. And it is horrible.
They throw a shitty GarageBand loop beat on top of it.
And then they have a zip in it. It is.
This is Bruce. This is who I'm meant to be. This is me.
Bad. And okay, I'm gonna say this right now, the woman singing is shit.
She's really not. I think she's the only good part of the song.
I've heard the woman sing elsewhere and she has a good voice. Whatever shit this is, she should sue. It's bad. This makes her sound horrible.
I don't think it makes her sound horrible. I think
It's bad. This, whatever they did to this song, they had some good elements and they let somebody else produce it and touch it and it got bad fast.
Well, here's the problem though. I think this is all produced the exact same way. I think every song in the movie sounds like this.
Well, we haven't seen the movie that everybody is talking about. Well, I want to see it 3 times in the theater. I don't care.
This is the equivalent of when me and everybody in the theater department had to go see Rent in the movie theater. And I had never seen Rent, and I just wanted to hear it, and everybody couldn't help but sing the damn songs.
Oh, I would have murdered them in the face.
This is also Moulin Rouge, where I had heard every single one of the songs before, and I kept going, why are we listening to these shitty versions of really great songs?
Moulin Rouge is a prettier version of Mamma Mia.
It is. With better music, let's be honest.
Hey, you be nice about ABBA. ABBA Gold is the shit.
Sting and the Police and Elton John both wrote better songs than ABBA. That is objective, and you cannot argue with me about it.
Yes, I can, because you can't dance to them as well as you can dance to ABBA Gold.
Sit down.
Nope. You are wrong. Wrong.
ABBA is good music. I'm not going to dispute that. But
you can't roller disco to Sting.
No, but you can rock out.
You can rock out on your roller skates.
Well, you can't rock out to Sting, but you can rock out to the Police, who are way better. Anyway, we got to the last verse. I was like, oh, look, some belting, just because we have to. Because it's a musical song.
This is so bad. This is bad. I feel bad for Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron and Zendaya. These are the same guys who gave us City of Stars.
Which is a gorgeous song that was ruined by the singing of Ryan Gosling.
That's a different problem. It's a different problem. But, I mean, that's a beautiful song. That song took away Lin-Manuel's EGOT.
Let's be very...
I'm okay with that because it's a beautiful song.
And let's be very fair to Keila Settle, who is Tony nominated.
What, for what show was it?
Hands on a Hard Body.
Oh, okay.
The musical Hands on a Hard Body.
She's got the chops.
She's got the chops to do
it. This is horrible.
Now, here's the scary part about this, okay? Mm-hmm. This was the winner for the Golden Globe for Best Song.
I know. This is the only thing
And for the past 4 years, the Golden Globe winner wins the Oscars. They say that this has the inside track, and Entertainment Weekly, of all things, quoted its production. Its new-style production value. Which I was like, this is a third-rate pop song. This is that thing of modern musicals trying to use pop production to sound new for the kids. That's what it sounds like.
Oh, my heart hurts.
It's so bad.
I'm trying to decide what I'm going to rate this. Because I really want to give it 0 stars, but that's not accurate. There are worse songs than this. There are worse songs that have been nominated.
All right, I'll go. I'm going to give it a 1.
That's what I'm inclined to give it.
I started with a 1.5. Because in my mind, it is a competent piece of music. And the production...
I like that one piece of the hook. Like that, it's like 4 bars.
And the production isn't like, the worst thing I've heard. And then I heard it again and went, oh no, it kind of is.
It is. It is bad. It's horrible. And what's worse is it's going to be stuck in my head. Don't try to fix that, please.
I don't plan on it.
Don't. Oh, it's just... I'm going to give it a 1. It's a 1. It's bad.
It is an audible piece of music.
That is factual.
That is. And it has a singer who's halfway decent and competent singing.
She's a competent singer. I feel like their processing of her is what's so... I think the producing is what makes her sound so horrible.
They've compressed it within an inch of its life, overdriven it, and overdriven every single element of the production.
Because I know that woman can belt.
And they wanted it to... I don't know why they assumed that they could get this on the radio. I guess that's the one thing that they did with this.
They were trying to push it. They should have just. I mean, there's a Kesha version. Just play the Kesha version. People be happy.
You want to overproduce it? Do the overproduction on the single version played by Kesha.
They needed to play a light hand on this music because it's supposed to take place, at the turn of the century. Like that's your setting.
Oh, but they were going for this modern feel,
The Cirque du Soleil.
It's that 30. No! It's that Steve Buscemi meme all over again. Hey, cool kids.
With the rock group t-shirt. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's 1.
All right.
So we listened to them all.
We did.
And based on our ratings, we believe that Remember me will win, and the Lopez's will get another statue. I'm okay with that. I'll be able to sleep at night.
Who do you want to win?
I want Remember Me to win. But I would not be sad or disappointed or grumpy if Mary J. Blige won. Those are the two. It's going to be one of those.
I'm a sucker for an underdog.
Oh, you want Sufjan to win? He's not going to win.
He's not, but I want him to.
That's fair. That's okay.
And here's the thing. If he does, it's going to be the most interesting thing ever. If he does win.
It will not be interesting at all.
Well, he won't.
Oh, that dude won. The guy with the funny name. That'll be it.
The quiet guy with the glasses who's not going to be able to say words when he gets up there.
Yeah, maybe.
He might say something really beautiful.
Maybe he won't come. He'll send somebody else.
I don't know.
Stranger things have happened.
And what happens if Benji and Justin come away with this stupid award?
Okay, I have not listened to or watched Dear Evan Hansen.
Uh-huh.
Because I know it's going to give me feelings, and I am avoiding feelings right now. Like, I don't want to go through the deep dive rabbit hole that I know is going to happen when I listen to that music.
Yeah.
And or watch the bootleg of the musical.
Meh.
Okay, don't give me shit about bootlegs when it comes to musicals.
$200 tickets, and I'm fine with you watching
it. The second it shows up in my town, when I can see it, they will get my money.
Yeah.
My watching a bootleg does not impede my desire to see something live.
Let's also be clear. No one really expects you to see it perfectly live all the time. People know stuff's going to get bootlegged.
If I was going to New York and I had the opportunity to go, I would pay the $400 or $500 to go see it. We've done that with Cirque du Soleil.
Ooh, boy, I don't know if I'd pay $500 to go see that.
I'd pay less for the crappy seats. I would pay the full price to go. Yes, I would. I'd pay the $500 to go see Hamilton. I would just do it. I would also enter the lottery.
You have fun. I'll go see a $5 movie or something.
Whatever. Anyways, I feel like if they win, it's going to put a damper on my desire to watch.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That's a whole different problem. All right.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the 2018 Oscar Locks from Macintosh and Mod.
Haven't seen what? All right, it's time for us to officially lock in our ballots.
We've got them here.
We've seen everything we're going to see.
Let's go through the methodology real quick, because it's changed year by year, but I think we're sticking with this as the formula going forward.
Okay. There are a lot of, we haven't seen any of the shorts. We haven't seen any of the foreign films.
I've seen some shorts, but
yeah, I've seen like a short. So like we cannot objectively
rank those different movies
against each other.
Yeah.
No. So the top eight categories, which is best picture, director, actress in a lead, actor in a lead, actress in a supporting, actor in a supporting, original screenplay, and adapted screenplay, we give ourselves a first place, second place.
Right.
So if we pick the winner, and that is our first choice, then we get 2 points.
Uh-huh.
If our second choice wins, we only get 1 point.
Correct.
For all other categories, we get one choice and you get 1 point. And we did that because there's a lot of overlap between us. So for a lot of like the technical categories, we haven't compared ballots yet. We're probably going to have the same choices in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And the first place, second place makes it a little more competitive.
It competitive. It also gives you a chance to talk about the difference between what you think the Academy will think versus what you think.
Correct.
And often that's how we've done it in the past, where your first choice is, okay, I think this is where the Academy is going to go. But you get that 1 point for, this is the one I really want to win.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like a safety bet.
Yeah.
So that's why we do it that way.
But there's strategy involved. So I'm sure, have your own picks and methods out there. If you've got ones that are different and really awesome, let us know, because we might go for that later on.
Yeah. But we filled out our ballots. I'll take a picture of them and post them on our Instagram so you guys can view them and verify with us. But we're going to start at the very end of the ballot. We're using the Vanity Fair ballot for our printouts.
It's very pretty.
It does. They always do a good job with this.
Okay, we're going to start at the bottom, which is short film animated. Now, I have seen 4 out of 5 of these because I was originally going to drive myself insane and watch all of the shorts and the documentaries.
And then you remembered that you have a job
and
2 children.
And this podcast thing that we're doing.
Along with 2 other ones that we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the short, I will say this, if you want to go watch the animated shorts, 4 of them, the only one that's not on YouTube is called Revolting Rhymes, and it's on Netflix if you have that. The rest, you can just type in YouTube or Google them, and mm-hmm. you can find them. They're readily available, and they're like 5 minutes apiece.
Yeah.
So they're easy to go watch if you really want to. Okay.
I picked Lou. I recognize the name, and it's Pixar One. And Pixar is amazing, so I'm going to stick with my tried and true.
Give me the one I haven't seen, Revolting Rhymes. It is based off of Roald Dahl's Revolting Rhymes.
Okay.
Which has previously been made into animated shorts back in the 80s. This is a new and updated version
mm-hmm.
That is CGI, but it is fractured fairy tales with even more adult themes.
Okay.
So I really want to watch this one on Netflix. I think we'll enjoy it a lot.
All right. Well, this is where we depart.
That's a start.
Okay.
Jumping into short film live action.
I just took a stab and wrote the 11 o'clock.
The 11 o'clock. So I looked these up really quick. The two front contenders.
I did not.
The two front contenders are DeKalb Elementary and The Silent Child.
Mm-hmm.
The 11 o'clock is the only comedy in the group,
okay.
So nice choice there.
Cool.
It's from Australia. I went with DeKalb Elementary, which is based off of a true story. It is a gunman walks into an elementary school, and an administrator talks him down.
Okay.
And that's based off of an event that really happened. So, went with that one. Thought it was pertinent and timely. There you go.
Yeah, you're probably going to win that one.
We'll see. You never know. They go all over the place. Documentary short subject.
I went with heroin.
I did as well.
Okay.
It's the most easily recognizable, mm-hmm. and this was, it got quite a bit of buzz for a short documentary.
That's why I picked it. It's the one that I know people are talking about, and usually with these categories, that means that's who people want.
Plus, a movie about the opioid epidemic is so hugely important. However, I will say, in reading about all of these are very pertinent and timely mm-hmm. films.
Documentary usually is, especially short.
And especially these, mm-hmm. this year, they are all about very specific issues of awareness and justice in their own interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually do want to catch up on all of these. All of them sound really good.
Okay.
Visual effects.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner as well.
Okay.
I don't think there was any movie on here that matched the level of what they had. And there's some good visual effects movies
this
on here.
This is a great category. Everyone deserves to be there. It's Blade Runner.
Film editing.
Baby Driver.
I thought about Baby Driver.
You picked Dunkirk,
really did,
didn't
but
you?
I picked Dunkirk.
I knew you would.
I think Dunkirk has a lot of movement on the technical awards
mm-hmm.
because it's not going to win a whole lot else. But it is easily Chris Nolan's most gorgeous movie, and that's saying something for that dude. Production design.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
Cinematography. Blade Runner.
Dunkirk.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that too.
The visuals, man. Blade Runner. But Blade Runner is all visual effects. I'm not saying that the cinematography is not good, but what you are given is the fold-out vision of the visual effects created by Blade Runner. Dunkirk is pure cinematography. It is all practically done.
I don't care.
That
doesn't make it better.
But I'm also thinking of the Academy angle on that some, too.
All right. Costume design. The Phantom Thread.
The Phantom Thread. It was.
I mean, there's no competition here.
I almost want to sing Paul Tompkins' theme song for that.
The Phantom Thread, 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 the Phantom Thread.
But I won't. I'll spare you.
Okay, the theme song is pretty funny.
Go look it up, though.
Yeah.
Makeup and hairstyling.
Darkest Hour.
Darkest Hour. We talked about it when we saw it, and it was such a huge deal. So
yeah, it's Yeah, it's just going to go to Darkest Hour.
Okay, now before we get to the next one, because I think this comes up for everybody.
Yes, we always get this confused.
And I looked it up, and it's actually a pretty simple explanation. Mm-hmm. Sound editing versus sound mixing.
Yes.
It's pretty easy to think about. Sound editing is the creation of sound for the movie. So that includes Foley work, finding sounds that are in libraries and things. But it's getting the sounds for different moments of the movie to provide for the production.
Correct.
Sound mixing is taking those elements and putting them putting it into the final soundtrack.
Okay.
And levels and all of the stuff that goes with that. So you can think of it as a pre-production, post-production type idea.
Okay, so for me, there were only two options for both categories.
And that would be?
It was either Baby Driver or Dunkirk.
Absolutely.
Those were the two contenders. And so for me, once we got that cleared up, I had to figure out which one did which part better. Okay, so for sound mixing, which is taking the sound and making it all work together, I put Baby Driver because I don't feel like there's anything in that film that you had to Foley as much. I mean, it's car tires, it's the car noises, and it's the music and the dialogue.
Well, and that is to some degree Foley, no. but in terms of you've got to get a car with an engine and run it.
But the real winner there I'm thinking of is that opening sequence where it's just timed perfectly to his walking down the street.
Yeah.
That's mixing.
Yeah.
And so that meant that Dunkirk was getting sound editing.
Okay.
With all of the bullets, the propellers, the guys talking in the planes. That was there was a bigger feat there to get those sounds together.
Okay.
You did the opposite, didn't you?
No, I did different entirely.
Oh, okay.
Dunkirk wins sound mixing.
Yeah, I was about to say you did the opposite of what I did.
Hold on.
Okay.
I've never heard bullet sounds so loud in my life in a movie theater. It was genuinely terrifying. The levels at which they mix those sounds.
You are so over-dramatizing that.
No, it really got to me. And here's the thing. For some reason, sometimes I hear things louder than other people. I don't know why. But that really stuck out to me as a point from that movie. It just did. I picked Blade Runner for sound editing.
Really?
I picked Blade Runner, and here's why. And it's a weird logic point, but we'll see if it works out. Of all of these movies, there's only one movie that had to think up sounds wholesale completely because you have an entire universe that's completely separate from what we know.
Okay.
And that's Blade Runner. They had to create entirely new sounds for that.
Then by that logic, you're fighting against Star Wars. That's not going to win at all. Anyways, you just throw away your boat.
You're probably right, but...
But now we have six categories where we differ, so that's kind of cool.
But you never know.
And you guys probably just listened to our original song, Listen and Review, so we're both picking Remember Me
from Coco. Yes. Easily, hands down.
Yeah. Okay, original score. I know who you're picking.
Who am I picking?
You're picking Phantom Thread.
No, I'm not picking Phantom Thread.
Who are you picking? Oh,
I'm
Dunker.
Picking The Shape of Water.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Alexander Desplat.
Oh, I thought you wouldn't.
No, I loved the Phantom Thread score. Don't get me wrong.
Even though it sounds like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
It sounds like the era, plus it is repetitive and tension building. It's great. It serves the movie well. But as we said, his score served the movie well, but that doesn't necessarily mean it stands alone well by itself.
Okay.
The Shape of Water does both.
Yes, and it actually elevates the movie.
You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong.
Okay. Okay, foreign language film, A Fantastic Woman.
I chose A Fantastic Woman as well. The story is too compelling not to pick.
And the Alamo Drafthouse is recommending it.
It's the only trailer I've seen. I wanted to watch the trailers just to get a feel.
The trailer's really good.
Documentary feature. Now, this is all over the place. I've looked at the descriptions.
I just did Last Man in Aleppo.
Okay. And that's a good choice, I think, because the guy... got a visa from Syria to get to go. I'm picking Faces, Places.
Okay.
The director of that movie is winning the honorary Oscar award this year, Agnès Varda, famous French New Wave director.
Oh, okay.
So that one's getting the most buzz. I'm just going to roll with it.
Okay.
It's also not a bummer movie.
Mm-hmm.
Animated feature. Coco.
All right. So now we get into our first place, second place.
Is this where we start arguing?
Okay. Adapted screenplay. Who's your first place?
Call Me by Your Name.
Ditto.
Easy choice.
Yeah.
The first place choice on this one's so easy.
Yeah, it's Call Me By Your Name. All right, second place.
You go first.
I did The Disaster Artist.
Mm.
What did you do?
Logan.
Really? Okay, I almost did Logan. But I feel like what's going to happen is, okay, it's not Call Me By Your Name, which it's going to be.
Yeah.
I could see them being like, The Disaster Artist should have gotten more recognition, and it didn't because of James Franco. So we're going to give it to them here.
I would say that, but the problem is that movie is James Franco.
I understand. Again, adapted screenplay. It was never going to be Mudbound. We tried to watch that movie. That should have been a TV series.
It really should have.
Like, we're watching this, like, this would be a good TV series. This is a horrible movie.
Though I will say, earned its nomination in cinematography. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It is, absolutely.
Original screenplay.
Okay. First place?
Get Out.
Get Out.
Second place.
I did The Big Sick.
You're going for your favorite?
I couldn't not.
And I'm down. I totally get with that.
But you're doing Lady Bird.
I'm doing Lady Bird. Okay. I think out of the other four, it's the strongest to me, honestly.
That's fine.
And the most intriguing for the voters.
You're wrong, but okay. Actor in a supporting role.
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, first place, Sam Rockwell.
Who's your second place?
I put Willem Dafoe.
I put Willem Dafoe as well, on the strength of how much buzz that performance has. Mm-hmm. Actress in a supporting role.
First place, Allison Janney.
Laurie Metcalf. So much has gotten talked up about her performance. It's so close between those two. It really is.
No.
I'm edging it some Laurie.
Not once we put Leslie Manville in play.
Who's your second choice?
Leslie Manville.
Leslie Manville. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm secretly hoping for a revolt and somehow she wins that award. Best actor in a leading role.
I mean, it's Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I put Gary Oldman first choice.
All right, what's your second choice?
Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, yeah.
So easy there.
Yeah, there's no more competition on that.
Though let me be clear. Mm-hmm. Timothée Chalamet, I think, is actually better.
I agree.
But it's Gary Oldman.
It's going to be Gary Oldman.
Actress in a leading role.
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yep.
Who's your second pick?
I put Sally Hawkins.
I put Sally Hawkins as well, because that's the best of that whole crew.
See, I thought you would have gone with Frances.
No. That movie's gotten so much negative buzz at this point, and so much talk has been given to the other things. And I almost, but at the end of it, I just went, no, Lady Bird's had so much more positive attention than negative attention. Mm-hmm. And I think Saoirse's going to take it.
Oh, she should. She should get it. I can't even be, like, I love Sally Hawkins' performance, but I can see that Saoirse's is better.
Yeah. Like, also, I really won't be mad if Margot Robbie somehow wins. She's really great in that movie.
It would kind of be a nice fuck you to everybody. But at the same time, I don't want Tonya Harding to get... I don't want Tonya Harding to win that. I don't want that validation to that story. That story I have a problem with. It sat with me.
I don't.
I do.
Now I think we're going to get interesting on these last two.
I don't know. Okay, director. What's your first place?
Jordan Peele.
Okay, I did Guillermo.
And we'll talk about why, but I think it's Jordan Peele. I think there's so much stuff around him.
Jordan's my number two.
Yeah, and I pick Guillermo for my number two.
Okay, that's fine. For me, it's just, I think it goes back to, I think this is going to be one of those years where, you know, the three, best picture, best director, and best writing tend to be the same film.
They center around it usually.
They tend to be.
Yeah.
They're usually linked. And I think this year we have such a weird slate of films, which is awesome. It is really cool how many different movies we have.
So I think I've always felt like there's three tiers this year between the nine films.
And I feel like this is a year where they don't go together. Because I think the best directing came from Guillermo, not Jordan.
Well, we're going to have to talk about Best Picture before I talk about why I disagree.
No, I understand. I think I know what you're going to say about that.
Okay. Best.
Who's your best picture?
Shape of Water.
Okay.
It's gotten such more buzz recently, and I think that's a movie that the Academy can still get behind, even though it's definitely different. Mm-hmm. I think that's one that they can more broadly get behind.
Okay.
What's your number one?
Get Out. It changed film. And I went back and I re-listened to a lot of our Oscar winner podcasts, which I do. I don't always listen to them, but I did. And, you know, we were so pissed about The French Connection.
Right.
French Connection 1 because it did something different and it changed things.
Yeah.
And Titanic 1 because it achieved things that had never been done in film. And it wasn't about the story. And this, we have a film that does both those things. It achieved something that had never been done. And it has the best story. It has one of the best stories. Because I'll be fair, most of these stories are awesome, which is really great. I like that it's difficult to choose.
That's wonderful. It's wonderful to have 9 awesome different stories mm-hmm. that are all unique in their own right as these Best Picture nominees.
Correct.
And all of them were worth nominating, I feel.
And at the post, we knew it was Oscar bait from the get-go.
There were 3 definite Oscar bait films. Well, 2.
And no, one... 3. Dunkirk, Darkest Hour, and The Post. Those were always going to be Oscar bait.
Dunkirk was a little set above Oscar bait just because of how it was done. But yeah.
But it's a war movie. War movies always do well at the Oscars. But those 2 feats make me feel like it's Get Out. And my number 2 is Call Me By Your Name.
My number 2 is Call Me By Your Name as well. I didn't pick Get Out at all. And here's the reason why. Mm-hmm. I don't have that much faith in the Academy.
That's fair.
I'm a little cynical about them.
That's fair.
I think recently, as opposed to when they did do things like with the New Hollywood movement mm-hmm. in the 70s with the French Connection, I think they've gone more conservative with their voting. To me, it goes back to The Social Network versus The King's Speech. Hmm. And that, to me, was a landmark. And
yeah, but a lot has happened since then.
I hope this is the year they buck the trend. Do not get me wrong. If Get Out wins, I'm going to be jumping in my seat. I will be so glad I lost those 2 points, okay?
Okay.
I will. I don't trust them to do it. And I will say this as well. Mm-hmm. While I know that some of this is tempered by me not having seen Get Out in about 9 months, or nearly a year now,
yep.
I think the 2 movies that I've picked are actually slightly better than Get Out. I think Get Out is amazing okay. and groundbreaking. But I think these 2 movies
are better. So if you could pick a third place, it would be Get Out.
It would. Absolutely. Okay. It's my like 2B.
And see, if I could pick a third place, it would be Shape of Water.
Absolutely.
So we have the same top 3.
The more I thought about Call Me By Your Name, mm-hmm. the just more I thought about it's just slightly better to me. It just is. Mm. And it's beautiful.
But see, I'm also
in a
playing
very
against,
interesting way.
There's no way that they're going to give if Jordan Peele gets best original screenplay and best director, there's no way in hell that he is not getting best picture.
You never.
There's no world that that's happening.
I think there is absolutely a world.
I mean,
that
of
happens.
Course, there's always an upset, but I cannot see that happening because the story of him getting all 3 of those and being a part of that very special group of this being your first movie and you hit it out of the park is too good of a story.
The only thing I have to say is like, but I also envision a world in which they think, and this comes down to things like the Cannes Film Festival, mm-hmm. where it's very easy for you to win a best screenplay and a best director category and it still not be the best film.
No, I get that.
And that's, I think, where
see,
I finally
that's
boiled
where I'm
down
like,
to.
It's not the best directing. It's the best story, and it's the best film.
And I think it is the best directing and best screenplay, but I think there's 2 that are slightly edging it out. And that's where we disagree.
We actually disagree a lot more than we thought. We're usually pretty neck and neck.
I mean, I like to go a little contrarian, and I think that's what happened here. I got there, but I also gave it some thought and really kind of went, no, I feel like I got to buck this a little.
Okay, what do we win?
Oh, gosh.
What does the winner get?
I don't even know, man. Bragging rights for the whole next season?
Well, yeah, it's going to happen anyways. I came up with an idea. So when we pick our movies for what we're going to watch through the year with our themes, we have veto power. We're allowed to be like, I'm not watching that fucking movie. You can't make me. The winner gets to deny 1 veto.
Oh.
Through the next Oscars.
Oh, damn. Oh, damn. We should have come up with this beforehand.
You get 1 veto.
Oh, now I'm
so
the
if
second...
you say, Diana, you have to watch RoboCop, and they say, I'm not watching RoboCop, you're like, I deny your veto.
Bullshit.
But you have, but that's it. That's the only one you get.
How many vetoes do we get anyway?
Oh, we have unlimited vetoes.
No.
Oh, we kind of do. I mean, we usually come to some sort of like agreement.
Well, we have to come to an agreement about vetoes if we're going to talk about veto power.
No, because, eh, whatever. that's a whole different thing. But what I'm saying is that you get to veto You get to veto a veto.
I get to throw down and be like, you are watching this damn movie.
Yes.
Whether you like it or not.
Yes.
Oof. Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right.
You get to deny a veto. I think that's a good stake.
Come on, Academy. Piss me off.
I'm so winning this. Yes. Yes. Oh. I think that's a really good prize.
All right, well.
It costs us nothing.
It costs somebody something pretty dear.
Yeah, it's a pretty steep punishment for the loser. Oh, I'm so going to win this.
Here's the thing, though.
I'm so excited now.
What's nice about our disagreement, though, is for sure somebody is winning this thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's not enough ties here for it not to wind up being that we're gonna actually be pitted against each other.
Yeah, we've had years where we've gotten the exact same score, even when we're different. We've had years where I think it wasn't last year, it was the year before. Like, I got like 12 points, which is horrible. Like, altogether, I only got 12 points.
Okay, so here's the tiebreaker, because we do have to have a tiebreaker. Oh, okay, just in case.
Tiebreaker, okay.
What time does the ceremony end?
Okay, it's supposed to...
closest to, doesn't have to be past or forward, okay. Just closest time that the ceremony ends that night, and we're going to go from the moment that the Best Picture award is announced.
Okay.
So when it's announced and the celebration happens, or do we go by the end of the telecast?
I'm going to go by the... Okay, we need to go by end of telecast, because if it's a very impassioned speech, they're going for as long as they're going.
When the credits roll?
When Jimmy Kimmel come out and says goodnight, everybody.
No, credits. First okay, credit, credits. First credit
rolls.
Yeah,
he has to run across the street to do his post-Oscar show.
First credit rolls, that's the end.
Okay.
What time?
Okay, it's supposed to end at 10, right? Or is it 10:30?
It's usually about 10:30, but they go as long as they have
to. What does the telecast say is the end time? Like, what does the TV guide schedule say?
Hang on, made me look stuff up.
Because I want to make an educated guess.
All right, so TV guide says it is supposed to go from 7 p.m., to 10 p.m. because that is your local news. That's bullshit. They've never ended
and
at 10 p.m.
And that's Central Time, right?
Central Time.
Okay.
We in Texas.
All right. I'm trying to think. There's going to be a lot of politically charged speeches.
Oh, hell yes.
But they're going to anticipate that, so they're still going to try and keep it tight. I'm going 10:22.
For some reason, the numbers 10:51 keep flashing.
Okay.
10:51.
All right.
That's in case we hit a dead tie, something happens. Yeah, that's just to prevent any scoring tie on our end. Mm-hmm. We've got closest to the end runtime.
Yeah.
God knows if it goes to 11 o'clock. If they start pushing 11, I'm going to be like, really, really, motherfuckers?
We're going home. We got shit to record.
Damn it.
All right. Well, as we've said previously... we hope you enjoy watching the show. We hope it's great for everybody involved. And you can look forward to our review and our reactions to the winners in the show the day after the Oscars. It'll be up there about Monday, late morning-ish, because it's going to be a long night for us.
We will get it up as fast as we possibly can.
Yes, it'll be up on Monday.
Yes.
All right, until next time, guys.
Bye.
That's it for this episode. Please take a moment to review and rate us on iTunes, and for questions and comments, drop us an email at macintoshandmod@gmail.com.
We also
stakes
should,
are high.
We're also going to have a hell of an in memoriam segment, so.
Fuck.
Plus a retrospective for Agnes Varda.
Barf. That's when I'll go poop.
She's a badass.
I'm still gonna go poop.